31 years ago, my grandpa was bringing Harvest of Thanks. 1982, I believe. I may be wrong on that. So, it's good to be back. One thing I remember, my grandpa said, "You may not be glad to see us, but we're glad to see you." And for new people that hopefully we can get to know you in the next few days, when Steve called, we were right in the middle of vacation Bible school. And so I was with the kids, and he called and answered, and he says, "Would you?" Well, this sounds like a great blessing, a great dream for us. And so I called my wife and I said, "Can we go?" And she kind of gave me the idea, "Why are you asking me?" We're going. So we're glad to be here. It's a great blessing to be here. See friends. And my message tonight's going to be what happens when the dream dies. Not the dreamer, but the dream dies. Tomorrow night I would like to speak on, if the Lord wills, forgiveness. And a peace that will last. And finally, on Sabbath, Lord willing, I would like to bring a message on a Thanksgiving and reunion, all put together by God's grace. We all have dreams. And some of us here had dreams when we were young that we wanted to be like Dad, be a farmer, be a firefighter, be a policeman. For girls, to be like Mom, whatever that job was, or whatever dream they had. Good dreams. And then we encourage the kids, don't we? Follow that dream. Don't give it up. If you've got a special dream, make that a priority in your life. You're going to do this. I'm going to accomplish this. And we should. We should be encouraging one another. Sometimes we get to people who discourage. "Well, you're not going to be able to do that. There's no way I can see you doing that." But I believe if we have a dream from God, God is going to make that dream happen. And I want to challenge all of you. Find out what God's dream is for your life and then pursue it wholeheartedly. But what happens when that dream collapses? What happens when you're ready to walk through that door and the door isn't there anymore? What happens, for instance, if you were training for 2 years cross-country? You wanted to go to the Olympics. So you're coming to one final test and you're ready to go. You're so fit, ready to go. And the day before the final race, you fracture your ankle. And then you say, "My dream is gone." Or the high school sweetheart you had. You wanted to marry her, you just didn't have the guts. And finally one day, you take enough candy that you got the strength. And you go and you ready to knock on the door and you find out she's already engaged. And your dream is gone. Or you're going to go to college to become a doctor or something. You got your life all prepared and it's viciously pulled out from away from you and you're saying, "Now what am I left with? What am I going to do with my life?" And a lot of people face those dreams. That one day they're gone. And you can be left with a nightmare instead. And I'd like to take a look at Joseph and what Joseph did when his dream was taken away from him. At least he thought. And sometimes we feel like our dreams are gone when God is just leading us around a corner to take us where He wants us to be in that dream. Joseph was preparing his life. He was Dad's favorite, of course, and Jacob comes and gives him this coat of many colors. So Joseph knows he's going to be, I was thinking about this, the head of the family. And I'm not talking about mob. I'm talking about a man who says, "Okay, he's preparing me to be the leader after Jacob is gone." And then all of a sudden he starts getting these wonderful dreams from God. He doesn't know what they are. Just like us. God gives us dreams and we cannot see the fulfillment of them, but we can see them just like Joseph did. And he tells his dad and his brothers, "Look at this." And I think it was done in much innocence. I don't think he said this, huh, listen to me. So he comes in his innocence, and I think when Jacob gave him this coat, I think naively he did not see the anger in his brothers. Because if he would have, he would not have done what he did with the dreams and everything else, because that would have added on and it would have caused a lot of problems. So he sees his life, everything's opening up, great. You know, I was there one time a few years ago, and probably you were too. Everything is just at your feet, everything's working out great. Or at least he thought so. And then one day, he woke up to a nightmare instead. So let's go to Psalms 37. Psalm 37, begin with verse 23. I hope that all of us know the story leading up to where we're going to read in 23. His brothers have had it. They can't stand him anymore because he is his dad's favorite. And I think we can empathize with him maybe from time to time, that someone else gets all of the glory. And you want a little bit. You'd like to have a little bit. Hey, Dad, didn't we do a good job today? But Jacob's eyes are always on Joseph, so they've had it. They're ready to do away with him. So verse 23. And it came to pass when Joseph was coming to his brethren, that's at Shechem, that they stripped Joseph out of his coat of many colors that was on him. And they took him, cast him into a pit, and the pit was empty. There was no water in it. And they sat down to eat bread, and they lifted up their eyes and looked, and behold, a company of Ishmaelites came from Gilead with their camels bearing spicery, balm, and myrrh, going to carry it down to Egypt. And Judah said unto his brethren, what profit is it if we slay our brother and conceal his blood? Come and let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hands be upon him, for he is our brother and our flesh. And his brethren were content. Now here we've got Joseph. Who one day has the world in his hands. And all of a sudden he comes to Shechem, and there his brothers are. They take that coat of many colors, ripped it, poured blood on there from a goat. They're going to take it back to the dad, threw him in that pit. And I think Joseph's heart was more broken for what they did than where he was going. Because I honestly believe that he loved his brothers. I don't think he flaunted what Jacob was doing or what God was doing. And here he comes. His dream, as far as he knows it, is gone. It's gone because he's gone from his father. He has no family anymore. All he knows is he's walking behind some stinky camel, and the camel is treated better than he is. And it's interesting to note that slaves in those days lasted about an average of 10 years. What happened was they worked you to death. Everything he has is gone, and there's nothing for him. And I can imagine Joseph with tears in his eyes, walking away from his brothers, and he's asking the question, why? And then he starts asking God, why? God, if you're showing me these great dreams, and I don't understand them, and now I'm going away from my family. And I think he hurt too, because his dad was going to be brokenhearted. He has all this weight on his shoulders, and he's being led away to who knows where. And he no longer has any power in his life. But we could also say he never did have power. Sometimes we feel like that. Everything can be going so good in your life and your family, and all of a sudden a child gets sick. Mom and dad die. A job is lost. And we start saying to God, why are you doing these things to me? If you love me and you say you're with me all the time, you're going to protect me and keep me, why do I have to go through all this? And Joseph couldn't see the dream God had prepared for him. And sometimes when we go through hard times and our hearts are broken and there are tears in our eyes, we are also asking God, why? And I can imagine Joseph's brothers. Joseph, let's see what happens to your dreams now. They're gone. Everything you had is gone. And you know what? No matter what situation we go through in life, no matter how hard the circumstances or how many tears we have to shed, when we've got God in our midst, the dream is always alive. The dream is always alive. Let's go to Genesis 39, verses 1 to 6, as we continue. All right? Dream A is gone. No dad, no family. In fact, he really is an orphan in that sense. He has nothing. He goes to be a slave, and you're not even considered a person. You're just like the beast that you're going to sleep with in the barn tonight. So let's go to chapter 39, verse 1. And Joseph was brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, and if we understand correctly, he was the chief executioner, brought him out of the hands of the Ishmaelites, which had brought him down thither. And the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him. Isn't that amazing? You know what I love? Is if someone will come to you or I and say, I see God working in your life. And here comes an Egyptian who doesn't know the God of Israel. All he knows is pantheon of Egyptian gods. And he sees that God is with Joseph. That is doubly amazing to me, because you've got a foreign man who worships foreign gods, who sees the true God working in a slave. And in the Egyptian culture, God did not work in slaves. God worked only through Pharaoh. So he's got to be amazed at what's taking place here. Joseph found grace in his sight. And he served him and made him overseer. And his house and all that he had put into his hand. Okay, dream A is gone. It's gone. Dream B. I'm in Egypt, but now I'm an overseer of one of the chiefest of Pharaoh's officials. Not bad. It's better than being a slave cleaning up after the camels all day. So he's got something else to look forward to. And he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he knew not aught that he had, save the bread which he did eat. And Joseph was a goodly person and well-favored. Well-favored because God was with him. And if God is with you and I, we're always well-favored in God's sight. He will always look after His children. So, plan B, working good. But, maybe not. One dream is gone. The second dream, let's go to verse 19. Same chapter 39. And isn't it amazing that when you're being favored by God, the devil's also watching too, and he knows if you're favored by God. Joseph was. Verse 19, it came to pass, when his master heard the words of his wife, which she spake unto him, saying, after this manner did your servant to me, that his wrath was kindled. And what was that? She accused him of rape. And Joseph's master took him. Remember, if I'm understanding correctly, he was the chief executioner. He was the guy that had you taken care of. Joseph's master took him and put him into prison and a place where the king's prisoners were bound, and he was there in the prison. Now, plan B is gone. Right? Well, maybe, you know, I'm doing good here. And I believe he served that guy with all of his heart. Working hard, doing whatever the guy wanted him to do. He was doing it. And he gets hit again. What would you have done if you would have been in that prison? Would you have said, I quit? Every time something seems to be working out for me, the door is closed on me. Maybe it's better just to find a little cubby hole in that prison and take some time and rest in the straw for a while. And yet, look what happens, what takes place after that. (Clears throat) But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy in the prison. Those prisons aren't nice things like we have, where you've got the internet, Wi-Fi, or whatever it is, and you know, it's like a country club except for the bars. A lot of those places, people died. They were so bad with filth and all kinds of lice and all other things. It wasn't the place you wanted to be. I think Joseph must have said, God, what are you doing with me? If you love me, why am I here? And I can imagine nights he cried himself to sleep, brokenhearted, first time, taken away from his father, being brokenhearted because not seeing his family. Then he's brokenhearted because he's accused of something he never did, put in prison. And when you go to prison, there is no law to say, okay, we'll do an appeal for you, Joseph. Most of the time, you rotted in prison, and in those prisons, you didn't get enough to eat, and you died. Second dream is gone. But God shows him mercy, which is amazing to me, that how far you can go. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners that were in the prison, and whatsoever they did there, he was the doer of it. And the keeper of the prison looked not to anything that was under his hand, because the Lord was with him. You know, sometimes we have this great dream. I'm going to do this. I'm going to be this person. Maybe a head of a company or who knows whatever. And one day you find out all you are is the janitor sweeping the floors in that company. But you know what? If God places you there, you glorify God for being there. God doesn't call He calls us to success in His eyes. We have to always remember that. I believe this was the time Joseph was to learn how to become a good leader. He was going to be governor one day, but God took him to prison to teach him how to have a humble spirit. Because I believe the time was going to come when he was invested with all this power from Pharaoh that he could allow anger and hurt and bitterness to control him, to seek revenge. But I believe he learned a humble heart and to find God in every situation. If we feel that we are condemned by people for no reason, instead of becoming angry and bitter over that, we ought to look to Jesus, who also suffered. Beaten, put on a cross for nothing he had done. And yet he loved God so much he wanted to glorify him in all his life. And if we come to that place in our life where our dream is not coming true, let's have a praise for God because he's always good to us. Let's remember that. Ecclesiastes is a very interesting book. If you want to get depressed, it's a good book to read for a while. He kind of preaches from the womb to the tomb that nothing goes right. All is vanity. All is a vexation of the spirit, right? If we do not follow God and have hope where there is none, we'll become like Ecclesiastes. It's not, nothing is worth it all. Of course, the writer of Ecclesiastes finally says, love God and keep His commandments, serve Him, obey Him. And God will grant you that joy and that dream that you need. But I can imagine Joseph a lot of times, what's the use? Every time I'm going to come to something great, I get knocked down and I get knocked down. This reminds me of Annie Johnson Flint. We've got a lot of her hymns in our hymnals. And she says this, He giveth more grace as the burdens grow greater. He sendeth more strength as the labors increase. To added afflictions, He added His mercy. To multiplied trials, His multiplied peace. His love has no limit, His grace has no measure, His power has no boundary known unto men. For out of his infinite riches in Jesus, he giveth and giveth and giveth again. This comes from a woman who wasn't hardly able to write at that time. This was the last hymn she ever wrote, in my understanding, before she passed away. Stricken with crippling arthritis, she had to be bedridden for most of the rest of her life. Previous to that, in her early 20s, she was practicing to be a concert pianist. And then she was diagnosed with that crippling arthritis, and it got to the point where she could do nothing but just lay in bed. But God had a dream for her, to write hymns to glorify Him. She did not allow her circumstances to take away the goal and purpose that she was going to have. And that is amazing to me, that God takes the foolish things of this world to confound the wise. Back to Joseph. Does Joseph see what's ahead? Remember, he's rotting in a prison. He's got an angry chief executioner who can come any day and say, your life is done. We're through with you. Can you imagine living like that, day after day after day? We don't know how long he was in prison. Many years, maybe, to some scholars. Could be 10, maybe more years. In a prison. God's done with me. We can go through a prison of shame and guilt in our life. We feel boxed up. Or go through a prison in our job and we go there, we don't want to be there, but that's all that we have. But I think Joseph learned that even when he was in prison, to be faithful to God in all his circumstances. All right, now one day comes. Two new fellas are here. Now he becomes the head of the jailer under this other fella. So, you know, he has a little grace there. It says God favored him in the jail. Here come these two fellas, a baker and a butler, put into prison. And what's interesting to me is they have dreams. And we don't know about it up till this time, but now Joseph is given a gift for interpreting dreams. We don't see that any time before. Tell me your dreams. What are they? Joseph interprets them correctly because God gave him another gift. Can God give you gifts when you're in prison? Yes, He can. And what prison I mean by that? You're going through hard times in your life. God can give you gifts while you're enduring what you're going through. Joseph could have said, I have had it with this God. And he did not. So let's see. Joseph correctly interprets these dreams. And then he's hoping that the butler is going to tell the king on his behalf. No, that doesn't happen either for a while. And then one day, when he's in prison, wondering if there's anything left in life, here come the Pharaoh's officials and grab him, wash him, shave him, get him all ready. But he doesn't know what's going on yet. And little did he know that all the hardness and the heartbreak was preparing him for greatness. I believe with all of my heart, God cannot use you unless you allow God to break you first. Every man who was great in Scripture was broken by God. Everyone. Look at Moses. Broken. David was broken. Saul ran after him for how many years? If you want to be used by God, you have to allow Him to come in and take you apart so He can build you up into a vessel that honors Him. Joseph, for how many days of tears, comes to a day where there will only be tears of joy for him. And he's called into Pharaoh's holy place, as they would have called it, into his presence. And isn't it interesting? No slave was allowed to look at Pharaoh in the eyes because, according to their tradition, he would have been instantly burned up because Pharaoh was a god. Well, that didn't happen this day. My idea is, and that's something I think we need to understand. You know, when we're growing up, when we're from the ears of like 15 to whatever, We all have this idea, wow, you've got your whole life before you. Everything's before your feet. Well, you know what? What happens if you're 34 or you're 54 or you're 84? Cannot God still start a dream in your life at that age? I read in Psalms that God still helps people with gray head to bring forth fruit in their old age. And you know what that means? God gives people who are senior citizens goals and dreams in their life to have. So don't say, well, I did all my stuff. No! Moses was 80 years old, wasn't he, when he receives his call? How old was Abraham going when he gets this great dream from God? So, senior citizens, ask God what your dream is now for these days of your life too. He always has dreams for us. I'm glad you said amen to that. Harry, that's you and Bernetti, Brother Schlenker. There's a lot of gray hair people that God has great dreams for still. Your glory days haven't passed. Let's go to John 14 for two verses there. John 14. Now, I'm going to take something out of context, so you're going to have to forgive me, but I'm going to do it anyway. Although some of you know where I'm staying, so I better watch out, huh? Look at this. Now, I know he's speaking to the disciples, but I want to pick this out, and I think you're going to allow me to do this. Truly, truly, I say unto you, he that believes on me, the works that I do shall he do also, and greater works than these shall he do, because I go unto my Father. And whatsoever you shall ask in my name, that will I do, that the Father may be glorified in the Son. If you ask anything in my name, I will do it. I want to take from these verses something simple. Taste and see that the Lord is good. Challenge God to show you something in your life that's been missing. If you haven't had a dream, God, show me a dream for my life that I can glorify you with. I know he's talking to the disciples here saying, you, but I think he's also saying to you. Great things God can do for us. And you know what the problem is? We don't take them and hold them and grasp them and dream with them. God's looking for great dreamers. You don't think Abraham had to be a dreamer? Being called away from his family to go to some forsaken desert out there called Canaan? God gave him a dream. We need a dream to make our life fulfilled. I remember when I was young, 5 years old or six, I was called to be a pastor. And I ran away from that. And I did everything possible, I think, in my eyes, that should have disqualified me from doing that. But God doesn't accept that. When he has a dream for your life, no one can stop that dream. So let's go back to Genesis. You know what my dream included? When I was growing up, my dream was to have a wonderful wife and children and a job from God. And God gave me every one of those things. Did I deserve them? No. But his grace was greater. He gave me a wife and children I could have never even hoped for. Don't allow the devil to steal your joy and your dream from you. Let's go back to Genesis. And where do I want to go here? Genesis, I think the 41st chapter. And you know, we have the dream. Joseph interprets the dream. But I want to go towards verse 37. He interprets the dream and he says, you know what, Pharaoh? And I believe God gave him exactly what he needed to say. We need to save up those 7 years the good years, 1/5 out of all the land of Egypt, and prepare for the famine to come. And verse 37, let's go there. And the thing was good in the eyes of Pharaoh and in the eyes of all his servants. Don't you think that's interesting? You've got the chief magicians and all these guys who look at this little upstart slave, prisoner, and he's telling them how the cow chews the cabbage. And they're thinking, this is our job. We should be the governor of Egypt now. What's this guy doing here? But it's even in the eyes of Pharaoh, it's interesting, and his servants, that God brings favor into Joseph. And Pharaoh said unto his servants, can we find such a one as this, a man in whom is the Spirit of God? Isn't that amazing? He attributes to Joseph what only he's supposed to take. Only in Pharaoh was the God. And the Spirit of the Holy Ones, as they would call it. And now he says to Joseph, he has exactly what Pharaoh does. And can you imagine Joseph sitting there looking at it saying, someone better pinch me, I think I'm dreaming here. Am I still back in that dirty prison? God begins to open his eyes to see the dream that God had for him. Brethren, we can walk so many days on rugged ground where it's all strewn full of potholes, but keep walking down that road, because glory is just up ahead. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, for as much as God, here we go again, attributing to Joseph what only belonged to Pharaoh. For as much as God has showed you all this, there is none so secret and wise as you are. You shall be over my house, according unto my word, unto your word, sorry, shall all my people be ruled. Only in the throne will I be greater than you. And you know, I can imagine Joseph saying, wait a minute, stop here. Every time I've come to this place, I've been knocked down. Can you imagine? I'm going to walk very carefully now on this. You shall be over my house, and according unto your word shall all my people be ruled. Only in the throne will I be greater than you. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, see, I have set you over all the land of Egypt. And Pharaoh took off his ring from his hand and put it upon Joseph's hand, and arrayed him in vestures of fine linen, and put a gold chain about his neck. And he made him ride in the second chariot which he had, and he cried before him, bow the knee, and he made him ruler over all the land of Egypt. He is in prison. And you know what's interesting to me? We are in that sinful prison when we're born. We just don't know it yet. We can be enjoying the life of sin all we want, and we're still in prison. But when God comes and opens that door, we experience a freedom like we've never dreamed of. And we start to live in the holy place. Brethren, God wants us in his holy throne place. Whether I'm talking about a spiritual, mystical place where Jesus and God are now, I believe he wants us praying up in that place. We're not there physically, but spiritually God can give us great blessings. That is why that curtain was cut from the top down, because God wanted us in there. We don't have to be outside, we can be in the holy place, the palace. And that's what I want. And I see on all your faces that you're excited too about something like that. We need to be there. I want to be there. Don't allow the devil to sell you the idea your dream can never come true. Because Joseph did. And God did for me. And I think if we had testimonies, some of you might be telling us some interesting things in your life. Let's bow for a word of prayer. Father in heaven, we are thankful for the many scriptures we have in life, that you have given us life and you've given it more abundantly to us. You've given us great dreams. To walk with you, God, is one of the greatest dreams we could ever have. It's not riches, it's not success, it is knowing the Lord and being acquainted with him.
That is the chiefest of all joys. Father, if we are lacking, if we're not having that fulfillment of you in our life, if we're not having that dream and that purpose, and the ultimate one of all is to see you one day, Jesus, and to hear you say, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant." Father, anoint us with a fresh oil from on high. If we have fallen, if we have been discouraged or frustrated, pick us up, rebuke the devourer for our sake. Let us come to you afresh and see that great joy we can have and the dream that keeps our life together, which is knowing you. We ask in Jesus' name, amen.